check your schedule, write it in your calendar, mark the time. It's 7 o'clock on Tuesday, February 23rd, 1994. Be sure to be there and make sure that you turn on your television to join with much of the rest of the world in the exciting event of the Winter Olympics Women's Figure Skating Championships. Because at that time will be the culmination of what have been the lifelong dreams of two women who have been on the cover of every one of the major news magazines in the United States, Nancy Kerrigan and Tanya Harding. Now, regardless of what your opinion is of who should skate and who should not skate, and what you have to say about this controversy, because probably you have something to say about this controversy, there is one thing upon which we can all agree, and that is that they have both really stuck with it in their quest for the Olympic gold. U.S. News and World Report, tomorrow's issue, February 14th, talks about Nancy Kerrigan and says that she has a tenacious commitment to skating that roused her from bed at 4:30 a.m. most days as a youngster. Her recent training schedule has been relentless, 3 hours a day on the ice, plus an additional 3 hours of stationary biking, weight training, and water exercises to build strength and mobility in her injured knee. Now, some people think, probably a lot of people think, that the chances of these two women winning Olympic gold has been significantly reduced by the problems that they have had to face, right? I mean, that seems to make common sense. They've been distracted. One of them has been injured. They've been dealing with court battles. All these things would simply say that they have a lesser chance of winning as a result of this. Not so, according to the news magazine. Instead, U.S. News and World Report says that if Kerrigan does come away with the gold, it will not be because she was able to avoid mental stress, but because, like many athletes of her caliber, she is able to harness it. Several recent scientific studies have revealed that the grit it takes to stand up against the psychological pressures of competition and even draw power from the tension is what separates the champions from the also-rans. Long thought of to be merely a problem to be minimized or eliminated, psychological stress is now considered crucial to top-level performance. Now, if that makes sense to you, and I think it does, it makes sense to me, it's saying that the problems that are encountered by Olympic competitors, and especially champions, are what enables them to win the prize. That if they didn't have the stress and the pressure and the problems to deal with, they wouldn't win. One more quote, referring not just to this year's Olympics, but to past Olympics as well. That for today's Olympians, as with those of the past, the ultimate proof of toughness lies not in the means, but the end. Standing on the highest platform when the medals are handed out. It's kind of a surprise to realize that what's here being said in tomorrow's news magazine was also said almost 2,000 years ago in the New Testament in James 2:12. It was referring to Christians, but using the Olympics as a metaphor, where we're told that blessed is the man who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. If we get it, let me say that that sentence is the kind of thing that ought to be written on a 3x5 card, kept in front of us, put on the refrigerator, or committed to memory. Because these are words that help us to understand how to deal with the toughest times of our lives and to interpret those tough times for good. Although, admittedly, it has sort of a surprising beginning. Blessed is the person who perseveres under trial. Blessed means happy. So it's saying that true happiness is found by persevering under difficulty or trial. It's not saying that troubles or problems or difficulties themselves make us happy, but that those who face them, and everybody does face them, those who face trials and problems and endure, persevere through them, end up being happy as a result. That there's sort of a good feeling that comes from being a survivor. For a person to face difficulty, a fight with an enemy, to take on what seems like a formidable force, and to not let that force get us down, to hang in there, to survive the fight, to be victorious instead of being a victim. Those that do that have a genuine happiness as a result, that it can truly be a good feeling, the good feeling that says, God got me through this, I got through this, I feel good about God, I feel good about myself, I'm strong and successful because I made it. I made it through when you wouldn't have thought that I would. It's the kind of thing in the common occurrence these days of what might be called after-disaster t-shirts. And people going around wearing these t-shirts that say, I survived Hurricane Andrew, or I survived the Midwest floods of 1993, or I survived the Los Angeles earthquake. People wear these things with pride. They wear them down the street. You want to read what it says? They'll actually slow down. Make sure, you get all the words. They're delighted. They find a satisfaction. Not that they went through these things. They wouldn't choose to go through a hurricane or a flood or an earthquake. But they're saying that they encountered something which was horribly difficult, and they were the winners, and they're happy as a result. And that's what James 1:12 means when it tells us to be happy, because blessed are you when you stick it out under trials. Although persevere, it means more than just survival. It means fighting back. It's not just a passive thing. It's saying that when evil assaults me, when these problems cascade down on me, that I respond in a positive way and I deal with them in terms of good. Think of it this way. Everybody has problems. I don't think there's much point of even discussing that. That's a wide point of agreement that doesn't need much explanation. We all have people who make us miserable. We have illnesses which make us sick. We have situations that get us down. You can collect all these together and call these the bad things that happen in life. But how do we respond? If everybody's got them, how do I respond to them? Some of us respond by running away. We quit the job. We leave the relationship. We move from the house. We get out of there. We escape what the issue is. We go and hide, whatever. And that's not what the Bible is here talking about. And then there are other people who don't fight back. They simply give in. So when the problems come, they surrender to whatever those problems may be. If it's evil, then they let that evil control their lives. That's definitely not what the Bible is talking about. But then there are some people who fight back with good. So someone's unkind, they're kind. They're in a relationship where the other person is unforgiving, they forgive that person anyway. When they fail to get their own way, when they're sort of pressed down, their Christian commitment grows and their Christian character just shines in these worst of circumstances. I was talking to a pastor friend about an experience he had last year. He was telling me about a man who was diagnosed with cancer and died a comparatively short time later from that disease. And he told about his conversations with that man over the several months between diagnosis and death. And he said each time he saw him, it seemed as if his body shrunk and his soul grew. Now that's persevering under trial. He was showing that no disease is going to conquer him. He was saying that even if he dies, he will grow in godliness and character, and it may look as if the cancer won, but the truth is that the cancer did not win, that he won, because blessed is the man who perseveres under trial. There's something that I think about a lot. I'm not sure it's every day, but it's probably pretty close to it. I think about it so often that I'm reluctant to talk about it publicly for fear that it will appear that I'm always beating the same drum. And that is the whole matter of finishing well. I was first introduced to the idea, at least the first time I really seriously thought about it, through a man named Dr. William Culbertson, who was president of the college that I attended. And he had had, from every appearance that I could observe, a very good and productive life. But in the latter part of his life, this became the recurring theme of his conversations, of his speeches, of his writing, finishing well. He was somehow concerned that no matter how well he had done up until that point, that somehow he would maybe say or do something that would discredit Jesus Christ and all that had preceded in his life. I believe that he did finish well. But many people don't. They start well. There are a lot of people who start a new job and they have excitement and they have enthusiasm and they have quality and commitment. But give them enough years and they're out of there. And when they leave, people are glad they left. They've left a distaste. They've left broken relationships behind. There are many people who start exceptionally well in school or in a marriage or friendships or going to a church or taking on a project or some dream that they're really into. But then the problems arise and they get stuck. But everybody gets stuck. They stumble. They fall down. And instead of giving up, instead of getting up, they simply give up. And instead of finishing well, those who started so marvelously finish so poorly. You see, anyone can start a race. Anybody can just say, I'm going to do it. In fact, I'm going to win. Anyone can claim to be a Christian. But it's finishing the race that really counts. It's sticking with it through the hard times. It's when stumbling, getting back up and going on. It's remaining faithful. It's persevering under the inevitable trials that are part of every life's experience. I apply that to my own life, and I say that when I'm finished, either with my life or the things to which God has called me within my life, when I take the things that God has called me to be and to do as a person, as a husband, as a father, as a friend, as a pastor, when I die, I don't particularly want God or anyone else to mostly talk about when I started or how well I started or really even what I've done along the way. For me, the best thing of all would be for others to say, for God to say, he finished well. I can't think of anything better to have written on a tombstone than that he finished well. And if that's true, if that can be said, then I'll be a happy man. Because happy, blessed is the man who perseveres under trial. A big part of that happiness for Christians is somehow by God connected to the reward that a Christian is promised to receive. James 1:12 says, because when we have stood the test, we will receive the crown of life. The English word that we have here for crown is actually from a Greek word that came straight out of the Olympic Games and is also written on the birth certificate of a number of people who are here this morning. It's the Greek word Stephanos, or the word, the name, Stephen. For Stephanos, or Stephen, means crown. And it refers to, in the Olympic Games, when the runner, the competitor, would win the competition and then would be given a wreath, usually a laurel. Actually, through the years of the Olympic Games, it was different shapes and it was different materials, but it was always the symbol of the victor, much as we have the gold and the silver and the bronze medals in 1994. For those people then, it was not only an indication that that day they had won the race, but they would hold on to them. They would save them for a lifetime, sometimes pass them down through generations, and they would wear them on public occasions, at ceremonial events, even at future Olympic competitions. They would wear them publicly as an expression of great pride of having become a winner. Now, the Bible is here explaining that Christians have the crown, the Stephanos of life, waiting for us at the end of life's race. That it's better than a wreath, that it's better than the Olympic gold, that it is eternal life. It is actually the life of God that we get to wear and to use, to parade and display for all the rest of eternity to come. It is the symbol of faithfulness and of finishing well. And when it comes to things like rewards, there are a lot of us who would sort of like to not wait. We're more into getting what we want now, ahead of time. But you know that's not the way it works. You know that Olympic athletes don't get the gold for starting the race. You know that they don't get silver or bronze medals simply for qualifying. You know that if an athlete in the process of preparation is attacked and wounded in the knee, that no medals are given for that. You know that if someone is accused of a crime and involved in a lawsuit, that there are no medals given for that either. The medals are not for beginning the race, nor for those that get discouraged halfway through the race, to encourage them to make it the rest of the way. The medals are given not for trying, but for persevering, for finishing, knowing that the prize is waiting at the end. And it's the same way for Christians. Do we get tired? Do we get stressed out? Do we get pressured? Do we stumble and trip and just not want to get up again? Do we have those days and experiences where we say, I just can't take one more thing in the pile? I have reached my limit. I just simply cannot go on. Yeah. Yeah, we do. And those problems are our opportunities to live Christianly. To show what it's like for a Christian to deal with the problem or the problems. It is not bad news. It is, strange as it sounds, good news, because blessed is the one who perseveres under those trials. Because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life. Except you hear all this and we say, yeah, well, but could I do that? I don't know if I can. I'm not sure that I'm able to keep going on. I don't think that I can hold up. I'm not sure that I can remain faithful under stress or persevere under trial or live Christianly when dealing with the really big-time problems of life. But when we ask the question, God resoundingly says, oh, yes, you can. And the promise comes from the God we love, and the God who loves us. Blessed are you who persevere under trial, because when you have stood the test, you will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. Let me ask you a question. When it comes to sports, or to education, or business, or any other part of life, do you think that people are winners because they win? Or do you think they win because they're winners? It's a big difference. If you think that people are winners because they win, then you say, everybody's competing, everybody's dealing with this, and the people that hang in there, the people that stick with it, the people that keep practicing and trying, the people that finish first in the race, because of everything they've done, they're winners and they get the gold? Or do you think that some people are just born winners? They're just born to win. And the people that are born to win, they're the ones that hang in there. They're the ones that stick with it. They're the ones that practice. They're the ones that get up when they trip. They're the ones that persevere. And they win. But they were supposed to win because they were born to win. What do you think? I suppose that you can answer the question for sports and business and much of life. Maybe argue it either way. But there's only one answer when coming to the topic of being a Christian. You see, we don't become Christians because we win. We win because we're Christians. When a person loves God, accepts Jesus Christ as Savior, when Jesus Christ becomes the Lord of a person's life, that person is born again. And part of the deal of being born again as a Christian is that that person then becomes a born winner. Christians are born winners. And it is because we are winners, it is because we are Christians that we win, regardless of the past. Because at that moment of rebirth, God does something in our spiritual genes that transforms every Christian into a winner. And God promises that every person who is a Christian will, in fact, persevere under trial and will receive the crown of life that God has waiting. I heard a great true story last month about a woman who was, for I think 50 plus years, the director of food service and the cook at a Christian camp in the western United States. And during that time, she experienced what I think is common to almost all camps. When the silverware is distributed or set out, only one fork is given per person. And there's sort of a routine that's part of camp life that, because of that, after the main meal has been served and all the dishes are collected, someone always has to say, "Hold on to your fork for dessert." So tens of thousands of times in her 50-plus years, this woman kept saying, "Hold on to your fork." She'd say, "Hold on to your fork because the best is yet to come. Hold on to your fork, hold on to your fork." So it sort of became the phrase by which she was known. Now, she did something that I'll admit is unusual and memorable. She specified that when she died, when she was laid out in the casket with her hands folded over her body, that she was to have a fork in her hands. And they did this. And she was buried with this fork sticking up from her body. As a reminder to everybody, both of the phrase by which she was known and the destiny to which she had gone. Hold on to your fork, because the best is yet to come. How did James say it? Blessed is the person who perseveres under trial, because when he has stood the test, he will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. So you're facing the trials? It's really difficult and hard. Then hold on, because the best is yet to come.